What is the church doing to bring those wounded by abortion back to Jesus? Find out next on Gospel of Life. Hello, brothers and sisters. I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome again to our program. Each and every day, you and I are surrounded by men and women who have been wounded by abortion, who have lost children to this violent act. They are in our families, in our congregations, in our places of work and recreation. They are everywhere. And you and I, as disciples of Jesus Christ, want to reach out to them with compassion and care. The church cares about their suffering, about their wounds, and wants to lead them back to the peace of Christ. Today we're going to talk about some of the ways that that happens, and in particular about what some of those wounds are and what people do about them. We have here with us our co-host, Janet Morana, our associate director, and also Dr. Teresa Burke, a psychologist and a leader in the effort to bring about healing after abortion. She is on our staff of Gospel of Life Ministries, and she also founded Rachel's Vineyard, which is a retreat program for those who have been wounded by abortion. Welcome, Teresa.
Hi.
Janet, good to be with you as always. Yes. Tell us, first of all, about how you got involved in this whole area of working with the trauma of abortion.
Well, I was a counselor, and I was actually doing a field placement in graduate school in the treatment of eating disorders. So the groups that I ran were anorexics, women that suffered from bulimia. And the subject of abortion came up one night because one of the girls, Debbie, was complaining about flashbacks and nightmares she was having to an abortion experience. And she said, these images are terrible enough for me to deal with. But then her ex-husband would call and he'd leave messages on her answering machine calling her a murderer. And when she would get these messages, she would be overcome with despair and grief and sometimes slit her wrists with a razor and end up in the psych ward of the local hospital. So she's sharing about this story, and another woman in our group for eating disorders said, you know, your husband's a horrible man, and everybody nodded their heads, and she said, I had an abortion too, and it would just kill me if somebody kept reminding me about it. And then there was another woman who stood up and started cursing, and she said, you know, to heck with anybody who tries to make me feel guilty about my abortion. Having an abortion is the best thing I ever did. And she cursed out everybody else that would make her feel bad. And then another girl got up and left the room, slammed the door, and we could hear her car screeching out of the parking lot. And you have to remember, I'm a dumb graduate student. You know, I didn't have a whole lot of experience. And this was like a bomb going off in our group.
So here's a group dealing with eating disorders. You have no idea that abortion is going to surface, and it just throws everything into chaos.
It came up, and I called the girl who left later that night, and I said, you were so upset when you left. Are you okay? And she said, I wish we could focus on eating disorders instead of abortion. And then I said, did you have one too? And she said, it was a long time ago. I don't want to talk about it. So when I went to the psychiatrist who was supervising me in my field placement and told him what happened, he shook his finger at me and he said, you have no business prying into people's abortions. That abortion is a private, personal thing. And I was instructed not to bring it up again. Mm-hmm. And I said, but I didn't bring it up. It was Debbie. She's having nightmares and flashbacks. I think she has post-traumatic stress disorder. And he said that those nightmares are caused as a psychotic reaction from the medication she's on. Mm-hmm. And he told me not to bring it up again. Well, then I could think of nothing else to do. I started one of the first therapeutic support groups for healing after abortion. I left that place. I was upset because he was so closed to the fact that abortion could be at the root of something like an eating disorder, because as it turned out, everyone in our group had had an abortion except for two people who had experienced sexual abuse.
So if you're in the mental health profession, just as if you're in any health profession, don't you want to look for anything that's going to affect people's health? And this is what's amazing about that supervisor is he wasn't saying to you, look, here are the studies that we've carefully examined, what the impact of abortion is, and we've come to the conclusion that it does not cause this particular problem. He didn't say that, did he? He just said, we don't want to talk about abortion.
He forbid me to talk about it. And I saw there that it was forbidden grief. And I thought that this group represents a microcosm of our society, because there's people out there like Debbie who are in tremendous pain. They want to talk about it. There's other people who the subject of abortion is so painful that they can't even hear the word. They can't even say the word abortion. And that's the girl that left. She had to get out of there. Mm-hmm. That's a symptom of trauma, avoidance. She wanted to remove herself because the thoughts and the feelings that the word, the discussion was invoking in her were so painful, she had to flee. You know, fight or flight, she chose to flee. And then the other girl that was so angry, you know, anger is one of the stages of grief. And there's so many people, we could see feminists throughout this nation, who are still stuck in the anger stage of their grief. Mm-hmm. And they use that as a defense mechanism, but it actually shut down. That girl who got up and started cursing and defending the right to abortion actually shut down any meaningful exploration that we might have had about what people were feeling in that moment. And that's how you treat eating disorders. You want to get to the feeling that's under that. And as I went on to study this, I learned how eating disorders and many other symptoms are actually reenactments of the trauma. And this is an interesting way to look at many of the symptoms that people have, because they don't connect the anxiety and the depression that they suffer, the suicidal thoughts and feelings, the eating disorder, or the relationship difficulties as a way that they're expressing a symptom from the original trauma. And that's what reenactment is all about. You find another way to tell the story, because the abortion itself is so horrific. It's so disturbing to the person who's had one. All that women want to do is move on with their lives. They want to forget that they ever even had it. They bury it so deep in the depth of their memories and in the depth of their soul, but that festers and it comes out in other ways. The story has to be told. You know, you're always the one that says the truth is marching on. Yes. And the truth finds a way to come out.
It finds a way to come out.
And it comes out through our symptoms, through the self-destructive behaviors, which, you know, someone who's acting suicidal, having suicidal thoughts and fantasies, or other ways that the trauma is telling the story in their lives. That's what the symptoms are.
Right. Now, those girls, for them to have developed an eating disorder, how long ago were their abortions, some of them? I mean, was it a year or two ago? Or how long does it really take, from your experience, from the time someone has an abortion, for some of these more like severe symptoms to begin to magnify themselves?
Well, I think that it starts out with the feeling of complete shame and disgust at oneself, the need to keep a secret. And some women begin throwing up right away. They come home from the clinic, they lurch over a toilet bowl, and they just start vomiting. And they talk about wanting to, it's like you want to get that experience out of you. You've just internalized something terrible, deeply traumatic. And so you're also hiding a secret. So for a lot of women, the eating disorder represents a secret that they're trying to keep. For other women, it's a way they're trying to get all these disgusting feelings out of themselves. Because you look at an eating disorder, what they're left with after they purge themselves is shame, you know, or over their body image is shame. So they find ways to express that shame, a way to have a secret, a way to recreate even the cramping that accompanied their abortion. So, you know, it can get, there's a lot of complex dynamics that I write extensively about in Forbidden Grief.
So Forbidden Grief is the title of the book that you have written to delve into a lot of these connections between having an abortion and not just eating disorders. That happened to be the problem that first awakened you to this phenomenon, but many other kinds of behaviors, some of which very self-destructive, and we're going to delve in a little bit more to some other examples. But the book Forbidden Grief can be obtained, Janet, through our ministry.
Right, through Gospel Life Ministries. And I recommend it really to everyone to read. For pastors, it's a great resource. People who work with youth groups, you know, very often you'll have a kid come in, a teenager and a girl, their behavior, like you would probably say, Therese, would suddenly change.
Yes.
You have to be alert for these signs. And I think if they read Forbidden Grief, yes, it will really assist them in kind of being a watchdog to see, you know, what's troubling this person? Why did their grades suddenly drop? Or why are they suddenly withdrawn, you know?
So like you say, pastors, youth ministers, people who, you know, because we don't get to choose the kinds of problems that we have to help people sort out. And that's a a type of freedom that that supervisor under whom you worked thought that he had. You know, that we, if we don't want to deal with a particular problem or cause of another problem, well, we can just dismiss it. No, that's not professional. That's certainly not pastoral. That doesn't even make sense. We don't choose the kind of problems people are going to bring to us. We're open to say, you're coming to me with a problem, let's figure out what it is.
And to listen to the person. Because I think that too many times they're given a diagnosis that never addresses the root issue that's driving the depression. And so you see women languishing in mental health hospitals. You know, there is a 162% increase in psychiatric admissions for psychosis and the very serious mental health problems, but they don't allow them to make abortion an issue. No one thinks to screen, is there a pregnancy loss in your history? So if a woman comes complaining of depression, or maybe she's acting out in a way, having affairs, you know, through which she's shaming herself, through which she's keeping a secret, because the themes of the abortion are what you act out.
You have in the book a chapter on substance abuse. So what are the how and why would a person who's had an abortion end up abusing alcohol or drugs?
It's a very common symptom of trauma, because you're trying to repress and forget and numb yourself to the pain. This wound is so deep. It's a soul wound, and the pain of it doesn't stop. And so the best that people can do is try to run away and escape that. And boy, that's accessible. It's easy, drugs and alcohol. And even women who are pregnant are 10 times more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol. When they're pregnant, they can't, if you think of the pregnancy later, a wanted pregnancy, but it's a trigger of all their memories and feelings related to trauma. And so that time of pregnancy, they can have a lot of memories that they want to numb. And even though they know that places their newborn at a risk, because of the trauma, they can't deal with the feelings, and the need to numb it is more powerful than the need to.
What about multiple abortions? We read, for example, about the Centers for Disease Control, which is an arm of the government and keeps statistics on various diseases and on the abortion procedure, tells us that almost half of those who are getting abortions in America today have had one or more abortions before. And it's an amazing number of people, likewise, who have had not just one abortion before, but two or three. We've worked with women who have had 9, 10, or even more abortions. And I even know of a case of someone who had 24 abortions. What, if abortion is such a negative and painful experience, which we know it is, what leads people to do it again and again?
That's actually a symptom of trauma. Repetition is one of the greatest indicators that we have that someone's been traumatized. And so when girls are going back to the clinic again and again, because they've never dealt with the original loss, they've never grieved the loss of the first child, they repeat it again and again.
You mean to try to master it somehow, to understand it.
They're releasing trauma-related tension. They're telling the story of what happened again.
Yeah.
And, you know, Judy Garland's a great example of somebody who had this conflict with her first abortion at the age of 20, and it was a child she wanted after she was married. And she kept having affairs with different men and creating pregnancy fantasies where she would pretend she was pregnant, and they would tell her that you're going to have an abortion. And even on a fantasy level, she was recreating this emotional experience of abandonment and betrayal with different men. And so you can see that women will act it out by getting pregnant again and again. And, you know, you and I were just talking to a woman that runs a Planned Parenthood. And she was saying how frustrated she gets when she says the women aren't learning their lesson. You know, they keep coming back again and again. And it's like that's a symptom of trauma, that this is a devastating experience. And people don't recognize it for the serious repercussions that it will have. And so they're not seeing this in the light and the framework of deeply damaging to women, and an experience that they'll continue to recreate until they're numb to it. And it happens. I mean, the first time a girl goes into an abortion clinic, she's very nervous, she's terrified, she has a lot of anxiety, and it's probably the worst experience of her life. And she'll look around her and see women just sitting there like they're at the salon under a beauty dryer, you know? And they'll say, like, how can you be so casual about this? And the woman next to her will say, oh, don't worry, honey, this is my eighth. It's no big deal. So they do, in a sense, master the trauma when they can become so numb to what they're doing that they've mastered those original feelings of terror, of horror. And we know this from other populations that have been traumatized, victims of rape. They're the ones who will go out after their rape and be in the middle of Central Park at 4 a.m., you know, they put themselves in harm's way again and again.
What happens to women, though, who've gone on to, you know, say marry, have children? You hear these cases in the news of real serious child abuse, mothers drowning their children. And is abortion, you think, affecting them, too, that they've had a prior abortion and this is one of the reasons why that they're doing it? Is it? Most people say, oh, it must be postpartum depression, and there's so many kids. But is abortion also, as far as you've seen?
Well, there's just many cases that are linked where child abuse is linked, and certainly the infanticide. And again, I would view that as a traumatic reenactment. Woman who burned her house down with all her children in it, you know, the very week she had her abortion. Another woman threw herself off a bridge with her kids in her arms trying to reunite the family because she had just had an abortion, reuniting the family in death. It was so traumatic for her. I think that you can look at some of the instances of child abuse as a reenactment. The other thing is your maternal identity is damaged in an abortion. For some reason, there's an unspoken message that you're inadequate, that it's better for you to destroy the life of this child than to have you as a mom. And that's how women feel, that I'm inadequate. And then long after, you know, they're in a stable relationship, they want their children, but they have this very deep-seated belief about themselves that is not true.
Right.
But because they haven't done their grief work, because they haven't reconciled this, they continue acting in that way. So they'll do things with the child that shames themselves and makes them feel like a terrible, bad mom. You know, the Andrea Yates was the one that said she heard some voice in her head saying, it's time for you to be punished. And I think, punished for what? But that's the kind of thinking that we've heard so many women who've had abortions who can later share that, you know, I felt like I needed to be punished. I thought God was going to punish me. You know, I did write to Russell Yates and I asked if his wife had had an abortion, and he told me she had had a miscarriage. But we also know that 50% of women conceal the fact that they've ever had abortions.
Well, this book certainly is a treasure of not just information, but insight. And that's why I want to, we're out of time now, but I want to urge our viewers again to get Forbidden Grief, contacting Gospel of Life, and read through it. Now, not just for the pastors or youth professionals, but those who work in the health profession, and just anyone who wants to understand how those around them have been damaged by abortion and how they may be, without even understanding it, living out these consequences in some of the negative ways that you've described. So thanks for the research that you've done here, and we'll have you back on other programs to talk about it even in more depth. Janet, any final?
No, just that I really think that people have to realize, too, anyone who's watching, that if they've had an abortion, there's hope and healing. And we'll talk about that in another show, but we'll have hotline numbers up that they can call for help if they know someone who's had an abortion.
Yes. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Stay with us now for our action segment.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child, so I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
Do you realize that every 23 seconds a baby is killed by legal abortion in this country? But you know, you can do something to save those lives. At Gospel Life Ministries, we have a bulletin insert called You Can Save Someone's Life Today, and we make this available absolutely free for your church. And it doesn't matter how many bulletins you print. Suppose you print 1,000, 2,000, we'll send it to you free. And in this insert, You Can Save Someone's Life Today are the resources that you need to reach out and help a girl. Suppose you hear of a girl who's pregnant and in need. We have the hotline numbers where that girl can receive help right in her own community. And we're talking about medical expenses paid, a place to live if necessary, job opportunities. She doesn't have to feel
that her only way is to go to an abortion mill. And also, if you know someone who is hurting from an abortion, we want to bring them back to the healing and mercy of the Lord Jesus Christ. And in this bulletin insert are the ministries there, toll-free numbers that are waiting in open arms to receive her back the help and healing. And in addition, you can inform your church community about facts about abortion. And then finally, you can get involved. You can help us and join hands in saving those lives, because in this bulletin insert are action items so that everybody can help save a life today. Thank you. Call us at our toll-free number.
Prayer is essential to everything we do as Christians. The Lord Jesus said, "Without me, you can do nothing." That's why we at Gospel of Life have launched a national prayer campaign to end abortion. We've composed a simple prayer that you can say each and every day. And that prayer is available at prayercampaign.org on the internet. You can say this prayer with your family. You can bring it to your pastor. Some pastors, in fact, have placed this prayer in the church bulletin or on the inside of their parish hymnals. In whatever way you can promote this prayer, you'll be adding more and more believers to this great campaign to ask the Lord to bring an end to abortion in America and to commit ourselves to do what He wants us to do to achieve that goal. Join the National Prayer Campaign to End Abortion at prayercampaign.org. Thank you.
I'm Dr. Paul Shank. Gospel of Life Ministries, Priests for Life, and the National Pro-Life Action Center are ready, willing, and able to come to your church, conference, convention, prayer group, Sunday school, or pro-life event. Dynamic, seasoned, and experienced speakers, teachers, and presenters are available. Renowned leaders such as Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life, and President of the National Pro-Life Religious Council. Dr. Alveda King, the niece of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and Janet Morana, Associate Director of Priests for Life and co-founder of the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, together with pastoral associates Dr. Teresa Burke, the founder of Rachel's Vineyard, and her husband Kevin Burke, counselor and social worker, Jim Pinto, pro-life pioneer, and our clergy, Reverend Dennis Wild, Reverend Peter West, and Reverend Walter Quinn, are prepared to preach and teach in your church about how to end the tragedy of abortion, minister to those suffering from abortion, help train and organize your pro-life group, lead retreats, and much, much more. To schedule a speaker in your area, call the Speakers Bureau at 888-735-3448, extension 258, or email us at speakers@gospelOfLife.com. The waiting is over. The time for action is now. Schedule an inspiring speaker for your area.
Welcome to our action segment. We've just been talking about a very powerful book, Forbidden Grief, by Teresa Burke. And in this action segment, we want to urge you to do a very simple thing, to get pro-life books into the libraries in your community, the very libraries to which your children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews go when they attend school, the very libraries that unfortunately have so many books supporting the pro-abortion position. Janet, this concept of getting books into the libraries, it seems to me, is as important as having the right foods in your refrigerator. You want to make sure your children aren't going to open the refrigerator and eat things that are spoiled or that are otherwise contaminated. And likewise, however, for the mind, it's the same thing. When you go to a library, what books are they getting when they have to research a particular topic or try to understand, or just to read for recreational purposes? Right. And parents can exercise some real influence on what books are in these libraries by taking a very positive, proactive step of donating or recommending some very good books.
That's right. You know, first of all, they don't just take our word for it that there's more books on the other side of the issue. There absolutely are. So I'd like them just to go to their town library or their school library and look up abortion and see what's being offered to your children if they do have to do a paper on this topic, or even if the school isn't assigning it. Kids are curious. They hear about abortion. They're going to look it up. What information are they getting? I guarantee them there's a lot more books on the now, NARAL, and pro-choice side of the position and not on pro-life. Well, I myself know when I was a teacher in New York, I looked into this and I said, well, what's the procedure to get a books into this library? And I found out they'll take them if you donate them. simple thing. So, for example, there's this book, Line 5. You can start with that. Contact Gospel Life. We would send you that book. You could offer it absolutely free to your school or town library. Forbidden Griefs, like you said, Father. And there's many other titles. For instance, there's On Message by Mark Crutcher. There's a book by some post-abortion books. Men and Abortion is another title. You're Not Alone by Jennifer O'Neill, and on and on and on. We could give them a long list. We do have such a list, matter of fact, that you can refer to at gospellife.com, where they can see a good list of pro-life books. And very often, all you need to do is go and meet with the head librarian, the person in charge of purchasing or obtaining books for the library, and make the offer and say, if I bring you, say, 10 books, 5 books, whatever they feel they can afford, I'd like to donate these brand new books to the library and see what they say. I guarantee you they'll accept them. Very often people complain, oh, there isn't enough of this in our library. Sometimes it's a budgetary reason. They don't have enough funds to purchase the books. If you make the offer, very often it's very well received.
There is a wide variety of pro-life videos and DVDs and audio resources as well.
That's right.
And to the extent that libraries are making this information available, that's also an arena where people can just donate. Now, this is a good project for a group, too, particularly a youth group,
right,
who can have a fundraising event, use the money that they raise in order to purchase some of these books, and then go as a youth group. If you meet, imagine the power of a group of students meeting with the head librarian and saying, we as students, on behalf of our group, would like to offer these books to your library.
That's right.
I mean, what more beautiful thing can there be in that?
And it
regard?
Doesn't have to be complicated. It could be a simple fundraising event like a bake sale. They can have a bake sale something like that, and then use that money to donate the books.
That's right. A book can change a life.
That's right.
And especially when the books are about other lives that were changed. You were going through that litany of titles. I was also thinking of our friend Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of the Roe v. Wade decision, who is now pro-life and rejects that decision, which legalized abortion. Her book, Won by Love, is a very, very beautiful and powerful testimony that should be in every library.
And that book they can obtain from us at Gospel Life, which is also personally autographed by Norma McCorvey herself.
So, brothers and sisters, let's not just sit back and lament what might or might not be in our children's libraries. Let's take action and make sure that the truth of the gospel and the truth about life are placed there right on the shelves and right before their eyes. Join us again next time for Gospel of Life. Until then, we're praying for you, and let's work together to end abortion. God bless you all.
I'm Dr. Paul Shank, and I hope you've been encouraged and challenged today. If you and others you know, perhaps a prayer group, Bible study, Sunday school, or pro-life group, want to know more about Gospel of Life and how people of faith united together can build the culture of life, call us at 888-735-3448. Visit us on the web at www.gospelOfLife.com or email us at info@gospelOfLife.com. You can write to us at Gospel of Life, P.O. Box 60038, Staten Island, New York, 10306.